Today is November 13th, 2013, and this is episode number 230 of the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, Managing Editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, Prognosticating Provocateur. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com. You know, most of my titles are lies, but that one isn't.
My whole image of you has just been shattered. I had no idea that most of your titles were lies. This is like finding out that that Santa Claus isn't real, which I'm certain he is. Or she. I've never actually seen this person.
Yeah. So you actually thought that I might have been the oft-ignored 102nd Dalmatian?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen we see each other, well, through the glass here at the studio, but but in real life, we see each other every year at Macworld and CES, and your little dog collar.
Yeah,
that's fair enough. And your black polka dots and the way you wag your tail. It's just the cutest little thing, and I love it when you roll over on your back so I can scratch your tummy. I just changed our demographic, didn't I?
Again, you're always doing that.
Just mixing it up.
That's good. So I'm not sick this week.
I'm glad.
You're dealing with environmental issues?
Yes, but they will be resolved.
That's good. So I guess we're going to do a podcast.
As long as we're here, we might as well.
Yeah, why not, right?
Yeah. And, all right. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine.
No, wait, there's more, isn't there?
We
have to talk about the stuff first.
That's right. Always we were just doing wrong. So well, I didn't want to screw it up with stories. All right. What should we talk about first?
Well, let's look at Apple's apparently not very big news this week, which is the iPad mini with Retina display.
That's really weird how that played out.
Yes.
Apple gave us a soft launch for the Retina iPad mini. And by soft launch, I mean they told no one it was happening. It was just on October. No, what month is this? November 12th. You could start buying the iPad mini Retina display model.
Yeah, at midnight. You know, it's funny. There were a couple of rumors on Monday, late Monday, like early Monday evening, really, that Apple was going to launch the iPad mini with Retina display tomorrow, making it Tuesday. And I are both like, whatever.
I called fakety fake.
Oh, yeah. I did, too. I mean, I didn't call it out loud.
But I did.
I called it out loud to you, but I didn't tweet it or anything. But
yeah,
I definitely
tweeted.
I was just as wrong as you were. I was like, there's no way. Apple's not releasing the iPad mini on a Tuesday with no advance notification. That's ridiculous, I said as I was being wrong.
As I'm tweeting, I'm calling fakety fake. And the next day, people called me out on it, and rightly so.
Rightly so, and, yeah.
And my favorite call out, it was just wonderful, and it came from my friend Charles. He sent me a photograph of a guy eating his hat.
For our younger viewers, hats are things people used to wear on their heads.
Straight. Not with the brim, like off to the side.
Correct.
And I tell you what, kids, you put your hat back on straight or I'll knock your head out right from under that thing.
That's right.
Now, that's get right. off my so, lawn.
So you ate a little hat. I ate a little crow. I mean, like I said, I wasn't public about my wrongness, but I will happily admit being wrong to our gentle listener.
You know who you are, our yeah. one listener.
Oh, we should mention we actually got a fantastic review.
Oh, we did
on iTunes. Let's because it seems like it's a vaguely appropriate segue. Let's mention that right now.
Okay. Yeah. So first, if you haven't written a review about our show at the iTunes store, please go and do that because Brian's narcissistic and we need to feed him.
Exactly.
I mean, because we love hearing your feedback.
Yeah, it's we very much do. You can write us too. I mean, you know, we mentioned the email address at the top of the show because we actually like.
Do we really?
From you. Yeah, it's because we like hearing from them.
Yeah, we do.
So review that we had our most recent review, and I'm looking for the. I'm scrolling.
This came from WMN1, which I believe is a traditional name.
Yes. Yeah. It's from the steppes of Mongolia.
Yes.
One.
Yeah. Okay, so this review says, the show is something I look forward to each week. They seem to have a great blend of comedy and facts. Their understanding of the Mac range and products comes through, as does their knowledge of all the Mac rumors. A great podcast.
Dude, we have so got people fooled. They think that we know what we're talking about.
I'm sending out to everyone right now.
Yeah, that's a fantastic review, man.
Except for that one person where I just made the hug a little bit inappropriate, but that's okay. They probably wanted it. And did it get hot in here?
It's just you, man.
Ah, yes.
It's just you. We appreciate everybody that's left a review. We have great listeners.
Yes, give us more reviews so I can give you digital hugs.
Indeed. Indeed. So, all right. So, that aside, we will admit to having been wrong. That's so funny. Yeah. Give us a review. We were wrong about the iPad mini with Retina display. Because Apple has never
owned up to it.
That's true. But Apple has never done this before. You know, Apple, since the iMac, since Steve Jobs started showing off new iMacs.
The soft launches for the iMacs and like the MacBook Pros, that's not the same thing as this. They were doing minor product bumps. This is a new product.
There were a couple of iPods that got released with a press release, but we have not seen certainly a new iPhone or new iPad get released without an event, and certainly not a major upgrade to one of the iOS device lines, which the iPad mini with Retina display is, because of the Retina display.
Also, the A7 processor, the M7 Motion co-processor.
It's got everything that the iPad Air does, and a smaller form factor.
It does. Yeah, the big difference between the two is the size of the screen, 7.9 inches versus 9.7 inches.
With the same resolution. Which is really fascinating. So this is a major product. This is I've no doubt that Apple would sell a gajillion of these this Christmas if it can only make them. And this soft launch to me indicates that Apple can't make them. Yeah,
yeah. I agree completely. This very soft launch tells me Apple does not have hardly any of these things. When I started visiting Apple stores around the Denver Boulder area on Tuesday, none of them had any. Not even display models. And it wasn't until Wednesday afternoon that any inventory started to appear at any of the Colorado stores. And some of them just simply didn't have any. Right. Still.
Right. Right. And at midnight on Tuesday morning, so Monday night, Tuesday morning, midnight 01, the Apple Store came back online, and lo and behold, there's the iPad mini. No press release at that point?
No, that didn't come until many hours later.
The business hours.
Yeah.
Right? And so we have no press release, no pre-announcement, no pre-orders, no launch event, no nothing. And we have not seen this, and that to me is fascinating. Absolutely proof positive that there's a limit to how many Apple can make this Christmas, because by holding a launch event, it seems like Apple would only have got a bunch of people mad because they couldn't get one.
Yeah, they would have had a lot of angry people. It looked to me, based on all the different checks that we were doing, mm-hmm. like Apple wanted to make sure that they had iPad minis in higher profile markets. So they were hitting the coasts, United States coasts.
Yeah, West Coast, East Coast, yeah.
And a few other big visibility city areas. But once you really got more central in the United States, then it became increasingly more difficult to find Retina iPad minis anywhere.
Now that's already it's already improving a little bit. Today, this is just the next day when we're recording this is Wednesday, the 13th. Some of the Wi-Fi plus cellular, the LTE equipped models started appearing in different stores. More stores in the Midwest, in the middle of the country, were getting them. So it's changing, but you know, like I said, clearly inventory is tight.
I'm going to say it's very tight. It's like the way we wore Levi's in the 80s. It's that tight.
That's what I call Tuesday, buddy.
And this is why we all love Tuesday at the TMO Towers. If you're wondering why we're all hanging around the glass staircase on Tuesday when you show up at the office, wonder no more, my friend.
Oh, that's so ridiculous.
I know. We don't have a glass staircase.
Yeah, that's the ridiculous part. Anyway. Anyway, before we go into yet another demographic shift, it's a really compelling device. The reality is, though, I think that Apple is going to upsell a lot of inventory problems to the iPad Air itself, because the iPad Air is so much thinner and so much smaller than its predecessors.
I agree. I think that there's a market for the Mini that was holding off because they really, really wanted Retina display. And the rest of the features didn't matter to them. Now that the Retina is out, they will buy, and they're not going to look at the Air. But I think there's a lot of previous owners of iPads that are clamoring for the Air. And I totally get it. Having one, holy crap. What a huge change from my third-gen iPad.
You're just rubbing it in, aren't you? The correct answer there is yes.
Yes. I wouldn't, except that quite frankly, I don't fill out those Levi's the same way you do. So, you know, this is all I've got.
Fair enough. So, iPad Mini Retina display is out. Apple has done this curiously soft launch. We definitely think the inventory is going to be limited on these things throughout the rest of the holiday season and into 2014. And it seems to be there have been some relatively credible rumors coming out that the problem is a shortage of the displays themselves.
That's what we're hearing.
Yeah, and I am at this point fully buying into that notion.
I have to agree. I think that's a big problem for Apple right now. And I think it's a problem that they can only hope can be corrected soon by being able to get displays in the quantities they need.
Right. All righty. So why don't we move on to our sponsor?
Oh, hey, we could totally do that.
This week, our sponsor is Squarespace.
And what an awesome sponsor to have.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually using them personally.
I've been fiddling with it. I still haven't moved my site, but that's a time management issue more than anything else. But I have been fiddling with everything at Squarespace, and it's all so much fun. Their engine. People who don't know how to set up a website should look at Squarespace.
And for those of you that are like, what is Brian talking about? Squarespace is this really fantastic service, online service, where they can host your site and they have all the tools right there in front of you when you log in through your web browser to be able to build a really professional looking site very easily. You don't need to have coding skills. You don't need to be a graphic designer to have an eye for how pieces fit together. They've done all of that for you. You just need to be able to find a template you like and have the content that you want to put in.
Right. Yeah, you do actually need to have your own content, but their claim to fame is great design. Their little unofficial little tagline is that they want to democratize great design, and the thing is that they've done that. Their designs, their templates are really, really clean. They're really modern. They look fantastic, and the engine that they put together to manage it all is quite capable and quite sophisticated, but it doesn't.
But not intimidating.
Yeah, it's not intimidating. That's just it. It's not intimidating. It's fascinating, and they do all this stuff that they're really good at it. If you do know how to do your own CSS and your own HTML, you can tweak that stuff to your heart's content. But if you don't, you don't need to, and your site's still going to look good, and that's fantastic.
Yes, if you need to sell stuff, you can do that.
Yeah, they have e-commerce. They can sell physical goods. You can sell virtual goods as well. They do credit card processing through a third-party company called Stripe. It's all there. You got to check it out. Squarespace.com.
What would be cool?
What's that?
Is if people could get a discount.
That would be cool. That is such a great idea. In fact, they have thought about that, and through us, you can get 10% off. So first of all, you can try it all without even giving a credit card. We've mentioned
that's
that.
A very nice touch.
I really do like that. Most places they get a free trial, but you got to give them your credit card, and then after a certain period, if you don't cancel, they're going to charge you. Well, that doesn't work that way with Squarespace. So you can get 10% off, and that's either if you're buying by the year or paying by the month, you get 10% off your first payment. So buy by the year because it's a much better deal.
It's a totally better deal.
You get an additional 10% off if you use the coupon code ACM11. That's ACM for Apple Context Machine, and 11
really
for
clever.
November. And we have a link to it in the show notes.
Awesome.
Indeed. I could have sworn I put my system sounds through my headphones.
No, I think you put them through mine. And everyone else's.
Yeah, I don't know why that happened. I'm sorry about that, folks. All right, I just hopefully fixed that. All right, so let us now thank you there, interns. By the way, I kind of forgot to mention it, but I heard a scratching at the door. Turns out they were down in that basement still. But they're out now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, but they're fine. I don't think they need to go to the doctor. Don't care. Everything should be fine. So let's anyway, thanks for the bellboys. Let us talk about Samsung and Motorola.
Oh, let's. And okay, so for everyone that hasn't been keeping up on what's going on, Apple and Samsung went back to court this week for a retrial in their patent infringement case that Apple won in August of 2012.
Right, this is a retrial for the damages only.
Correct, but only part of the damages. Apple was awarded over $1 billion in damages. And by the time everything was said and done, it's like $365 million of that has been deemed to have been calculated improperly by the jury.
$450 million.
Originally, but Apple showed that some of that was improperly included.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so it switched, and so that amount went down.
I missed that.
That's all right. I put it in stories so that our readers would know.
Can be more informed than me. That's good. That's very good.
Yeah, and it's a little bit of information they can use in bar bets too.
Exactly.
So that's why Apple's requested amount for damages for that section today, which was what, $380 million?
Yes.
Is it makes sense because if people are thinking, well, geez, why would Apple ask for less? And they didn't. They asked for more.
I see. I may need to edit that story just a little bit.
Well, luckily, since we don't believe in linear time, you can have it edited before anyone has ever read it.
That's true. That's a very good point. And what happened this week is that the jury got seated. That was yesterday. And opening arguments began today. And Apple asked for $380 million, and Samsung said, no, $380 million is way too much. Try $53
million.
Because that's the way it works, right? Plaintiffs ask for the moon, and the defendants scoff and say, you don't need the moon. All you're really entitled to is this little molehill over here. And then, you know, and then it usually comes out somewhere in the middle.
Right. And so, and although in this case, it may not be in the middle. My Jedi instincts, which hopefully are better than they were when I called fake on the iPad mini launch, but my Jedi instincts are telling me that the jury is going to lean more towards Apple's end of the spectrum on this.
Yeah, if Apple can make its case, and I suspect that Apple's going to be able to make its case. I think you're right. I think you're right.
Well,
I think it's going to be a lot closer to what it was.
Yeah, and it's important to remember that this is not a trial to determine whether or not Samsung is guilty of patent infringement.
That is not being retried.
That is not being retried. So the jury will be presented with information that says, here's a de facto point. Samsung is guilty of doing this.
Right.
And that does not play well for Samsung. It also doesn't play well for Samsung that the jury instructions that they pushed for were just across the board rejected. And what they did was they presented jury instructions that were incredibly complicated, required the jurors to provide just incredible amounts of detail about every single product that would be accounted for in the damages, and it was just crazy. Oh, and the wording that they wanted the jury to be given was confusing, and I think to a degree very intentionally misleading.
Oh, of course it was.
Yeah, and so worded in such a way that it made it sound like Apple was the bad guy in this.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and so ultimately, what Judge Lucy Koh, she's overseeing the case, what she decided to do was to go with the jury instructions that Apple presented, which is basically a very simple spreadsheet that says, here are the products, and here are the damages, and that's it.
Interesting. I think this is going to go well for Apple, so we'll have to see.
Right. So what we're looking at right now is probably about a week's worth of trial, after which the whole case will go to the jury, and then we'll just see how long it takes them to come back with their determination on damages.
Right.
At that point, Samsung can then appeal.
Right.
Which, of course, they're going to do because that's exactly what they will do.
Of course. And that's what they should do.
Yeah, and that's how the system works.
And even though they're the bad guys, even though they deliberately and willfully infringed on Apple's intellectual property and had enormous amounts of sales and profits built on the backs of Apple's work, even though that's the case, of course they should appeal.
Yes, the way the system works is that it's okay to appeal, and it doesn't matter if you're the good guy or the bad guy, perceived or actual.
Mm-hmm.
The system needs to be as fair as possible. So,
that's true.
So yes, even though it's already been determined that Samsung intentionally did this, they have the right to appeal.
Yes.
They also have to show up in court it's early December, because they have to answer questions about why they took documents that were confidential and that's, they were not, not supposed to have access to.
That's not part of this trial, though. It is, really?
Yep.
It's part of the retrial?
No, it's not part of the retrial, but it's part of the whole trial. This retrial ties into the original case, just like...
Yeah, but this jury won't be deciding any aspects of
this
that.
This jury will not be deciding any aspects of that. This will be a this will be in front of Judge Lucy Koh. So where I was going with that is once Samsung deals with the sting that I think that they will feel from this retrial, they will not have time really to catch their breath and lick their wounds. They have to then jump into yet another hearing related to the overall case to show why they shouldn't have sanctions for improperly getting a hold of classified documents and then using them to their own advantage in licensing negotiations.
Right.
Whoops.
Oops. Right. Speaking of licensing negotiations, Sierra. Thank you.
I shouldn't laugh because...
Don't leave a mark.
I know. It just makes me look so cold and callous.
Indeed. Let's see here. We should mention the iTunes Typhoon. The
Red Cross charity drive. Yes.
Thing.
Okay.
That Apple's doing.
Yes. Okay. So since Brian so eloquently put that in front of you, let me see how I can tap dance around that and make it even more beautiful. Okay. So we have...
There's a wicked bad typhoon that has laid waste to the Philippines.
Yes.
10,000 people dead outright and untold numbers of people who are homeless and all kinds of damage. It's
the
almost
single,
out of control.
Yes, it's the single largest storm to hit land in recorded history.
Which is just So it's awful, and Apple has set up a way for you to donate through iTunes.
Yes, and so what they're doing is giving you a drop-dead simple page at the iTunes store where you just need to click a button. And you can make donations, $5, $10, $20. They go up to $200. And the money goes to the Red Cross for storm relief in the Philippines. So this is earmarked money. And instead of taking their usual 30% cut, Apple is giving all of the proceeds that are collected to the Red Cross. So so if you make a $200 donation, all $200 go to the Red Cross.
Right, which is fantastic. And this is all going through your iTunes account, meaning that it's going through the credit card attached to your iTunes account, and it's completely hassle-free on your side. And since Apple is doing the processing for you, you don't need to worry about where that money's going. And it's going to the Red Cross, which is, you know, has got a very long history of doing things right.
Yes, and the Red Cross has a special place in my heart now because I've been able to experience firsthand what they do because they were the first on scene up in Estes Park when we had to deal with our devastating flood. Nothing compared to what's going on in the Philippines, but it was a serious thing, and they were there right away. I don't know how they were able to get there, but they found a way to get to us. So anyhow, I like the Red Cross now. Well, I did before, but they have a special place for me now. Give them money.
Yes. Give them money. Give them money. Now we're at an interesting crossroads here, Jeff, because we're at the halfway point of where we usually go.
Mm-hmm.
And we are more than halfway through the things that we thought we were going to talk about. So we can either lengthen out this third rapid fire or really talk about the other big topic a lot.
Well, I know what's going to happen. We're going to end up lengthening out our rapid fire because we have a problem where we can't stop talking.
Okay, fair enough. So... I thought it would be interesting. This is, you know, I tend to Go a little OCD when I'm interested in anything, and I tend to, if I'm interested enough, I tend to really get into it a lot. And the thing that's been catching my interest of late are Bitcoins. I thought it'd be interesting to talk about that, despite the lack of a direct Apple connection.
Well, if you have an Apple computer.
That's true. We can actually mention ways to mine Bitcoins on a Mac.
So tell me, what is Bitcoin?
That is a good question. So Bitcoin is what's called a cryptocurrency. It is a virtual currency. Its value is predicated entirely on the way its users want to value it. There's no gold backing it. There's certainly no country backing it. There's no country governing it. There are no regulations covering Bitcoin. And it is largely, completely anonymous. So the Bitcoins you hold are anonymous. The Bitcoins you spend are anonymous. And the things you buy with your Bitcoins are also anonymous, which, of course, has led to its use in some illicit and illegal activity, such as buying illegal drugs and even weapons through online services. For instance, Silk Road, which recently, about a month ago, got seized and shut down by the feds.
But it's back running again.
It's a different one, though.
Yes, nonetheless.
It's a new Silk Road, which, of course, you know, the Silk Road was originally started by a guy who was going under the handle of Dread Pirate Roberts. Roberts. Try that again. Dread Pirate Roberts.
As you wish.
Was it Robert? Oh, my God.
Did you never make that connection?
No. Of course I did. But I'm drawing a complete mental break on whether or not it's Roberts or Robert. Dread Pirate Robert.
Well, in Roberts. Princess Bride, it's Dread Pirate Robert.
Okay, single. Okay, all right. Well, that's what he was doing too. Anyway, and there's a new Silk Road, so you know, consider that to be a new Dread Pirate Robert taking over. But that's not. My interest in Bitcoin is not in buying illegal or illicit products or services.
Good save.
No, I know. I don't do drugs.
No, you don't. You don't. And good for you.
Whatever. Yeah, works for me. But there are more and more places that take Bitcoins. I think one of the big services that has started recently. I don't think I've ever mentioned this to you, Jeff, but there's a service called Gift.com, GYFT, mm-hmm. And what they do is they sell virtual gift cards for Bitcoin. So you can buy an Amazon gift card. You can buy a Target gift card. There's like, I think there are 200 companies that are currently servicing. It's all in the U.S. only at this point. But it basically allows, it's a good way for people who have Bitcoins to actually convert that money into currency, because there is still a lot of controversy about that. The U.S. is making it difficult to get money in and into and out of U.S. banks to Bitcoin exchanges. It's not illegal per se, but the U.S. is making it more difficult. So there is definitely a risk aspect of Bitcoins in that nature.
Okay, so that makes gift cards even more appealing, because you can sidestep the hassles that you would otherwise encounter trying to convert your Bitcoin into other currency.
Yeah, and you can turn around and go buy your groceries or, you know,
DVDs. Whatever.
Yeah, DVDs, whatever you want to. And all of which is you know, it's I'm not an attorney and I'm not an accountant, but the way the U.S. tends to look at the money is you have to declare profits even if they're illegal. Bitcoin is not illegal, but just because you can bypass a currency transaction doesn't mean that you don't owe taxes on any profits you've made.
See, you could just be an accountant.
No, I can talk about it. I can't explain it or do it, and I certainly don't know. I don't know for sure what the regulations are on that stuff. My simple point is for people to have their eyes open, and if you're going to get involved with Bitcoin, that you understand what you're getting involved with. So one of the reasons why Bitcoin has been on a tear lately is that it got some coverage with the Wall Street Journal, got a front page story, and that has. That and a bunch of Chinese money being invested in Bitcoins has seen this dramatic run up. Current price as of this recording is slowly coming up. $394.5 on Bitstamp, which is an exchange, and $431 on Mt. Gox, which is another exchange.
How do I get a Bitcoin?
Well, two ways. You can put money onto one of these exchanges, which can take time. And so if you go and open an account at Bitstamp, or you go open an account at Mt. Gox, or you go open an account at btc-e.com, you can then deposit money in that account, and that involves them having to do wire transfers and confirming that, you know, and confirming with your bank that your account's legitimate, et cetera. That's the part that takes time. And then once you have money in that account, you can then buy and sell Bitcoins to your heart's content. The other way to get Bitcoins would be to mine them. And that's the interesting thing about Bitcoins to me. Is the mining. It's the way they're created.
And that's actually, I find that very fascinating as well. So exactly how would I mine a Bitcoin?
Well, I think we should probably even start with why you would mine and what that even means.
Well, I'm assuming the reason I would want to mine for Bitcoins is so that I don't have to take cash, wire it somewhere, and buy into Bitcoins.
Yes, that is that is certainly a reason to mine Bitcoins. So Bitcoins are actually created by a computer network. And the way it was set up, and the guy who set this up, is he went under a pseudonym, and it could actually even be a group of people, but my personal suspicion is that it's a single individual who went under the name of Satoshi, S-A-T-O-S-H-I. And okay. he set this up so what happens, because there's no federal bank, there's no reserve bank that's behind this, there's no single institution, there's no single person that's behind Bitcoin. There's nothing none of the established ways for a currency to have value and be regulated, none of these things apply. So what happens is that transactions that are made with Bitcoin, if I buy something or if I trade something or if I just, you know, if I buy or sell Bitcoin, those transactions have to be confirmed by the network. And the network are people who are running clients that basically check the math. And in exchange for checking the math, they get little tiny amounts of tiny percentages of each transaction as a fee. And then at the same time, there are hidden in these big long math problems that have to be done, there are hidden blocks of Bitcoins. And when you find one of those blocks, you're given what's called a block of Bitcoins, which are currently 25 at a time.
Okay. So this is not a centralized thing where I can go to the Bitcoin offices and look at my Bitcoin account. This is a distributed system where there are people running servers all over the world to process the math that ultimately generates Bitcoin.
Yeah, I hate using the word server, but yes. It's, you know, it's kind of a combination between servers and clients, effectively. And the thing, so the system is designed so that eventually there will be 21 million Bitcoins released. But it happens, the schedule is basically over 130 some odd years. So the last fraction, and every, I think it's every couple of years, the amount of Bitcoins released per block is halved.
Okay, so eventually the amount of Bitcoins that's released at any given time will be a mere handful.
Fractions of a Bitcoin. And it's set up, it's designed to be able to be used in tiny fractions. There are currently 8 decimal places used in Bitcoin transactions. But there's another 8 that are reserved, and it would be possible to add even further denominations for further fractions.
Okay, so this isn't something that people should look at as like a penny, where a penny is the smallest amount.
A penny is 1% of a dollar.
Right.
And so you can actually go 6 more decimal places.
Right. So,
and eventually it could go even more. So if a Bitcoin is worth $1 million, a single Bitcoin is worth $1 million, we would be trading in quadrillions or trillions, or I'm not sure what the terminology would be.
Right. Okay. So but as the value of an individual Bitcoin increases, then those fractional parts become worth more too. So in that Absolutely. Sense, and I know this may not be the best analogy, but in that sense, it would be sort of like gold, where you have, we'll say you have an ounce of gold. That ounce of gold can become worth more or less over time, and it's still the same amount. It's just that its value can change. And Bitcoin, right. The value can change like that too.
Correct. Yes. And the fascinating thing to me, one of the many fascinating things is that more than half of the Bitcoins that will be released have been released. And it's only 5 years old.
Oh, right.
So the other 46% are going to be released over the next 120 some odd years.
Right. And
isn't that fascinating?
It is. But as you said, it makes sense because the amount that's being released at any given time is halving.
Yes.
So – yeah, so that amount becomes dramatically smaller. And you said it's every 2 years it halves?
Yes. I think it's every 2 years. Don't hold me to that.
Okay, so we're at 25 right now.
Yeah, it used to be 50. I don't know. I think it actually started at 100 and then went down to 50, and then now we're at 25. But it may have started at 50, and now we're at that second generation.
Okay, and so at the next generation, that's where Bitcoins will start being released in a fractional percentage, because it'll be 12.5 Bitcoins.
Well,
right?
So that's the thing. They're already released in fractional percentages because what happens is, so the way this works, the more computers that are aimed at this math, the harder the math is made on an artificial basis.
Okay.
So there's a difficulty level. And because, you know, like when it initially started off, it was Satoshi and maybe a few of his nerd friends, right? Mm-hmm. And they were doing all the math. And it was set up with a difficulty at that point. The difficulty would have been zero. And every 10 minutes or so, they would find a block of coins. And that's the way it's designed. It's designed to be like every 10 minutes, on average, a new block would be released. In reality, it is average. So, you know, you might get zero in an hour or 20 in an hour.
Right.
Right. So, but as more and more computers started doing that math, if the difficulty didn't increase, the coins would start coming out every 9 minutes, every 8 minutes, eventually every few seconds.
And then you have crazy inflation.
Well, then you basically have all of 21 million coins coming out early. So what they do is they make it artificially harder so that it slows down the pace of the math solving. And now we've gone to – we're currently at a difficulty of 510 million. So it started off at the difficulty of zero, and now it's at a difficulty of 510 million because you have all these people who are investing in specialized ASICs, which is I can never remember what ASIC stands for, but think of it as a system on a chip. And, millions, tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars have been invested in developing the specialized equipment.
So people are buying hardware for the sole purpose of crunching the math to mine for Bitcoins.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And currently, because the value of Bitcoin has gone up so much in the last 2 weeks, the last 10 days, the value of even used hardware on the market is going up. So, you know, it's interesting. I find it super interesting to mine Bitcoins profitably. You probably need to be thinking about investing thousands of dollars. to mine Bitcoining Bitcoins as a hobby, and you're okay with getting just a few fractions of a Bitcoin, you could buy a, what's called a little block eruptor right now. Those are, by the way, those are up to $32.
Okay, so
two weeks ago they were at $7.95.
Wow. Okay.
And at $30, you'll never make your money back.
So really, as long as you guys handle time the way we do, where it's nonlinear, because you know this now, go ahead and buy them 2 weeks ago.
Yes. Or maybe 2 weeks from now as they start to fall again, as people realize that, I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. If you send me a note, if you have any questions about that, there's an app called MacMiner that is a GUI. It's just a private, free, open source Mac app that harnesses the Bitcoin clients that are out there that are all command line, but it gives you a GUI for doing it all, and it's a really good app. We'll have the URL in the show notes. It's fabulouspanda.co.uk.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And see, I was right. We were going to be able to talk for a long time on that.
Oh, I cut myself off, too.
It's okay. I was about to cut you off.
If you have questions about this, if you actually want us to talk more about this in the future, let me know. Let us know.
Yeah. Yeah.
ACM@MacObserver.com.
Yeah, really. Brian is becoming quite the expert on Bitcoin. So if you want to know more, please let us know. And I will ask your questions.
You will ask the leading questions.
So that Brian can take us down the path to riches through virtual money.
Yeah, riches. Instant millionaire. Just add Bitcoin.
That's right.
That's right. All right. So there is that. And let's talk about iBooks.
Oh, let's. I find it interesting that a book series that has been incredibly popular and not available at the iBook store is suddenly there. And that's the Hunger Games series.
Yeah, a very popular young adult series. It was basically, kind of took on the role. It was the next Harry Potter, put it that way. Probably not quite to the success of Harry Potter, but very successful for Scholastic, coincidentally, Harry Potter's publisher. And, of course, the source for very popular movies.
Yes. The second movie. Oh, man. I'm going to look like a total movie fail now because I can't remember.
Catching Fire.
And it is out or about to be released?
I think the third one's about to be released, which is called Mockingjay.
Oh, holy crap.
I haven't watched any of the movies because I hadn't read the books. I hadn't read the books because they weren't on iBooks, because I prefer the iBooks experience.
And now they are, so you can read them.
I can't. In fact, I did. I got The Hunger Games, and I read it despite not being a young adult. Although, mentally I'm a young adult, so hey. And I can't wait till you read it because there's some things I want to talk about.
Oh, and you know that it's next on my list. However, I have another book that I'm really, really interested in right now, and it's important that I finish that one first.
Oh, really? What is that book? Jeff?
Oh, Brian. That would be the unreleased book that Brian Chaffin wrote.
Do you mean that I've actually sent that out to beta readers?
As a matter of fact, that's exactly what I mean. And I'm into chapter 2 right now and really loving it.
Now, didn't I send this book out about a year and a half ago?
Yes, but this isn't exactly the same because this has been really through the ringer on edits and rewrites, and while there are many aspects that are the same, it's like getting to read a new story. So I think you should check it out too, Brian, because it's pretty cool.
So you mean I've spent the last year and a half completely rewriting the story from the ground up so that it actually is good?
No, that's not what I mean. What I mean is you wrote a really good book, and then you spent a year and a half making it better and more marketable. That's what I mean.
Yeah, you're being generous there, but it is anyway. You are reading it, and I appreciate that. You're one of my beta readers, and after you finish that book, I'm looking forward to your reading The Hunger Games, so we can talk about that too.
Yes, and I'm looking forward to it.
So another thing that came out. So I discovered this on Sunday, and I wrote about it on Monday. And I believe that they came on iBooks on either Friday or maybe Saturday. So you know, it was brand new to iBooks, and I think it was because there was a rights issue between the author Suzanne Collins and the publisher. I'm not really sure why, but it's been on Amazon Kindle for a long time. But the other thing that we got this week was we got Calvin and Hobbes for the first time on iBooks.
We did, and that's great. It was surprising to me because the whole Calvin and Hobbes property is so closely guarded.
Yeah, Bill Watterson, the creator, which we're talking about the comic strip. If somehow you don't know about Calvin and Hobbes, you should fix that. But it was a comic strip that ran for 10 years by Bill Watterson, beloved. You know, who doesn't like Calvin and Hobbes? Genius, it was just genius work. And he guards his rights to that jealously. He won't merchandise it. He thinks it would cheapen the strip. For whatever reason, now we have three books on iBooks.
And just to be clear, his books have been, or his comic strips have been available in books for years.
In physical books.
It's just this is a new thing for the iTunes store, and I'm actually really excited to see his books there because that opens up his works to potentially a whole new audience.
It does. That's true. It's true. And but what's sort of like it's hard to know. These are just two properties. But I've been following Hunger Games. I've been waiting for Hunger Games to come to iTunes for since the first movie came out, which was at least a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago. And I didn't want to watch the movie until I read the books because I'm all weird about things like that. And and I would every few weeks I would do a search, you know, look for the book, or you know, I did a bunch of searches for like, you know, iTunes. The Hunger Games and iTunes, and get a bunch of threads from people complaining about why it's not there. And I could never find out the specific reason. But does this change mean, is this because Apple is stepping up its acquisition game? Or is this, you know, is it just a, you know, coincidence? Is it a matter of course of time? We have two important properties coming to the iBooks for the first time. We don't know.
No, we don't know. It's a good question. And if it is Apple being able to negotiate to get new properties on the iBook store, how is that working out? I mean, what's really involved in that? Because Apple is now having to deal with the whole thing being told that they really don't have control over their negotiations anymore through the court.
Well, they have no control over pricing. Right, they have to compete. They have to set their own retail prices. That's what they don't have any control over. But they certainly can negotiate to bring on new publishers, or you know, renew terms of publishing deals, as long as they're not trying to do agency pricing.
Right, and those negotiations ultimately get approved by the court, because they have someone now that's supposed to be overseeing Apple's negotiation processes and monitoring those.
Correct. So the question is, the big question for me with this conviction that Apple is a convicted antitrust offender at this point, barring appeal, and my question was always, what is Apple going to do about this? Is Apple, because, you know, if Apple wanted to, Apple could give away books free on iBooks all day long, take the loss, and never even blink.
Right.
And In other words, they could play Amazon's game. Apple can play Amazon's game better than Amazon if Apple wants to. And Amazon's game is to sell books at a loss in order to be a loss leader to bring people into buying other stuff.
Yes, and Amazon really doesn't turn a profit.
Amazon does not turn a profit, not even really. Amazon simply does not turn a profit.
And Apple does. So Apple has money to play with.
Apple's got a ton of money to play with. And iTunes is such a – I'm sorry, iBooks is such a small part of Apple's business. If Apple really wanted to compete with it, it could do so without putting much of a hurt on the bottom line. The question is, would Apple?
Can you imagine, though, if Apple said, you know what? We're cutting the cost of every single book we sell in half right now across the board. Doesn't matter what it is.
And we will always be a penny cheaper than Amazon.
Right.
Or at least a penny cheaper.
And at what point does Amazon start to cry foul? They already have cried foul. What am I saying? Because they were the consultant that the Department of Justice used in this whole case. Amazon was crying foul through the whole thing already. But can you imagine if they cried foul for Apple doing exactly what they do?
Yes, I can imagine that happening. But again, you know, did Apple enter the iBooks deal? I've always suspected that Steve Jobs felt that if he didn't save the publishing industry, no one would. No one could. I don't know that that was his driving motivation for a fact, but I do remember some various conversations with him in Walter Isaacson's book and comments that he made in news reports and in interviews about saving publishing. So I mean, the point is this. Is Apple in iBooks for vanity? Is Apple in iBooks just to make sure that that Amazon can never hold Kindle as a, you know, a sort of hostage over the iPad, it's hard to know why Apple is in this business, and it's hard to know exactly how far Apple is willing to go, and I'm really interested in both of those questions.
My feeling has been that Apple's involvement in the ebook market was primarily a tool to drive value in the iPad.
Yes.
And
yes.
Yeah. And now what else goes along with that? I mean, are they going to really train and use their power to have more of an influence on the publishing market? Maybe. I'm very fascinated, just like you. I want to see exactly where all this is going.
Well, and here's the thing. It would require two things. It would require money, of which Apple has plenty, but it would also require people to be making these decisions. Like for instance, there should have been someone whose full-time job was getting The Hunger Games on iBooks before the movie was released. That should have been their job. And maybe there was, right? Maybe there were simply intractable contractual issues that kept it from happening until this last week. But, you know, Apple needs to make sure that it has a deep and rich book catalog, and that it has every new book when it's released. You know, Apple, if Apple wants iBooks to be competitive outside of an experience thing, because quite frankly the iBooks app beats the Kindle app on any platform, if Apple wants to compete outside the experience, it has to dedicate people to making sure that all of the content that they need is on iBooks, that it's findable, that, you know, they should be doing author interviews, they should be trying to get extra content included with these books, they should make discoverability. So of course, that's something that Apple struggles with on the App Store too.
Yes,
you know, and there's so many more things that Apple would need to do to make iBooks really competitive with Amazon. And will they do it? Are we seeing that? Are we seeing the fruits of that starting?
I don't know.
With Calvin and Hobbes and the Hunger Games, that's my question.
Maybe, but I don't know.
I don't either. But it's interesting.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be really bummed if Apple got out of the book business at this point. I've bought almost all the books I buy are on iBooks these days, and I've got notes in them. And I want to see Apple in this business for the long haul.
I do too. I really like the all-in-one experience I get buying from the iBook store. Now, Apple has everything integrated so nicely. It's overall a nicer experience, and I agree. I think that the iBooks app is a much more pleasant ebook reading experience than any of the other dedicated ebook readers or apps that I can use.
Yeah, just from a performance standpoint, from the tactile, the skeuomorphic things that we've talked about, from the ability to do notes and to look up things, all these things they're better. They're just better on iBooks. They're just plain better.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, I think we managed to do a show.
Oh, we totally managed to do a show. And I could hear it in your voice earlier. You're thinking, wow, are we actually going to run through a whole show in our normal time, or are we going to end up being way short? And Brian, we never end up way short.
It's true. Take us out, though.
Okie doke. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me on Twitter or app.net. I'm Jay Gamut both places. And please go to the iTunes store and rate our show.
Indeed. You can follow me on Twitter at TMOBrian. That's Brian with a Y. I'm at geektales.com for my personal blog, and Jeff is at Fresh Brewed Tales.
Oh, I put a new post up.
Oh, excellent. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us, and that's all for this week.
Yes, and while I'm bragging about me putting up a new post, Brian put up a new post too, so go check his out. And, as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.